We are here tonight to have a bit of a discussion on the EduTalker panel, online discussion, and this is the seventh show. It's a great project that's been set up by David Noble and by John Johnson. Tonight's topic is about the practicalities of using iPods and iPads in the classroom. And we're lucky enough to have, I would find just some experts in the field to talk us through what's going on there. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm just going to get them to introduce themselves and give us a wee bit of background of their involvement with iPods and iPads and smartphones. And I think the best way to do this particular bit is just to follow the order that were listed on the wiki there. So if we'll just go through, we'll start off with Fraser, then on to John, and after that, Julian, and then last of all, Dan.
Okay, well, evening everyone. My name is Fraser Spears, and I work at Cedars School of Excellence in Greenock, which is a small independent school where last year we deployed one-to-one iPad for everybody in the school. So we've been doing that for about a year now, and the interest has been pretty overwhelming, so hopefully we can share as much knowledge as possible tonight.
Hi folks, I'm John Johnson. I'm a ICT Development Officer in North Lanarkshire Council. I'm more, I think, an enthusiast than an expert in the iOS stuff. I helped to organise a short-term one class, one-to-one last session, and support various people using smaller numbers of iPods in the primary classroom, mostly.
Hi, Gillian Penny. I'm head teacher at Gavenbourne Primary in West Lanarkshire. We've recently taken on some more iPod touch devices and some iPad 2 devices. We've been using Mac for a while, and we're sort of very much into a creative curriculum. Not experts by any means in terms of the sort of technology behind it, but we are looking at creative ways of using them to support the curriculum.
Hi, I'm Dan Bowen, with a Welsh accent, teaching in England. Well, was teaching in England. I'm now a learning and teaching advisor in Surrey and in parts of London. I've been doing quick projects with iPod touches, iPads and Kindles, and using them in the secondary classroom mainly, although we have used class sets for them in the primary classroom. In English, maths, and some other subjects, which we'll probably talk about a bit later. I also use other devices like the Kindles and iPads and ESIs. So the kind of lots of the things that we found out that quite similar. So hopefully you can kind of cross the connections at some point today as well. Okay.
Right. If you're looking on the wiki, I've kind of gathered some of the questions seem to go together quite well, so I've kind of gathered them together, and we'll address them sort of at the same time, and we'll work our way through what people have been suggesting be discussed. So the first thing that's up here is about network connectivity and IT support, and this is something that my own schools had a bit of an issue with. In fact, I think it may have been me that suggested this one. We have had a bit of an issue with this. The IT support guys from the authority have been very reluctant to support the deployment of iPads and classrooms. Now, obviously that's the situation that we're finding ourselves in. And I was just wondering if the rest of you are having any similar kind of issues, or obviously in a different situation, such as Fraser and John, what your thoughts are on that. For this particular answer, I think if we started with the school people, the class-based people, and then worked our way out through the school people to the authority people. So if we start with Dan and then on to Jill, and then making a Fraser coming in with the kind of school-wide thing, and then John with a sort of an authority type view.
Well, I suppose I'm from the authority / school anyway, so I don't know whether I'm the person to start, but I can kick it off if you want.
No, Dan, on you go.
Is that okay? Okay. So we're basically, you know, I've worked in several schools of these, and, you know, similarly to the points that you raised earlier on, I think across the board, it depends on how kind of cleaned up the network managers have been, because it's, you know, depends on the device. It's quite new technology. There's lots of initial issues with proxy settings on the devices in terms of the internet connectivity, because a lot of the apps require the internet to actually download a lot of their content. So I've seen quite a lot of reluctance, but actually, they're moving forward with it, and the network, you know, the network guys have been kind of picking things up on kind of ghostly servers and all kinds of stuff to get around this. You know, there's another thing to do with the accounts. I know it's a separate topic on the wiki, but the accounts are kind of proven more tricky than the actual network connectivity. There's also the issue of charging, and I'd like to know what other people have thought about sometimes the charger, say the iPod touches, where sometimes the USB ports on some of the newer iTouches seem to not carry as much charge across to the devices, and sometimes don't charge. We've seen quite a lot of problems with that as well. But yeah, I think it depends on the IT people in the school, obviously, but they are overcoming some of these issues, and I'm sure the schools should run a one-to-one project, so they'll be able to fill us in on how they've managed to do that. Okay?
Brilliant. Jill, would you like to get
in? We're in a kind of different situation in that we're kind of flying solo at the moment as a school. There's not really anybody else in the authority looking at this type of technology at the moment, and we're also an authority that doesn't have Wi-Fi, something that's not actually allowed at the moment. So we're working with a few kind of issues, to say the least, but they're still proving to be very effective devices, even with that. I have to manage the management of them myself and in terms of setting them up and setting up the accounts, etc., and has to be done a lot of it has to actually be done at home in order for it to happen. But it's early days for us yet, and we're hoping this will lead a change of approach in the authority. But we are basically flying solo to school. But it's not impossible.
So it's quite similar to our own situation, Jill. Can I just ask, do you find that even though you're doing it on your own, the authority genuinely supportive of what you're doing, or do you think maybe you could be a bit more so?
I don't want to say too much and get myself into too much trouble, but we're not really an Apple authority at the moment. So it is a technology which they're really coming to terms with. The education side of the authority are certainly supportive of what we're doing because of the nature of the work that's coming from what we're doing, and are quite happy to support. But the support is only in that they're not getting in our way, if you know what I mean. We really are doing it on our own at the moment, which is fine. If we were to take this to another level, which we'd very much like to, we'd need authority support at that point to bring in certain infrastructure, etc.
Well, if we're talking about doing things on their own, I suppose, Fraser, you would be the poster boy for that kind of thing.
Yeah, a little bit of a one-man band here. Just in terms of the technology, I'm the only person at Cheapers who's responsible for technology. So I do everything from the high-level strategy all the way down to pulling the Ethernet cables through the floor myself. But, I mean, it's a common problem talking to your IT guys and trying to get them to accept a device that has an Apple logo on it. I mean, in some ways, a lot of these guys have built their kind of professional reputation around being Windows and big servers and so on, and this is a real change for them. So, I mean, for us, I basically do the whole lot myself. In terms of proxy servers, let me just say a couple of things about that. We run a transparent web proxy, so you don't have to have configuration on the device itself. That's one thing. And secondly, charging from certain ports normally will for a modern computer, that can work okay. I think if you're seeing individual devices accepting less charge than other devices in your set, then those devices should probably get looked at under warranty. The way we deal with charging is we send a lot of our iPads home. More than half of our iPads go home every night, and we ask the kids to charge them at home. We send the charger home as well. And if they bring the device back charged, that will run the whole day for them. So we don't do a lot of charging in school. What we do for those younger classes is we find that the devices run down the batteries at very different rates. So it's not that common. Certainly with the iPad, the smaller devices are a different story. But with the iPad, it's not that common that you need to charge the entire class set in one go. Quite often there'll be one or two that are below 20%, and then you need to charge them up. And then the next day there'll be another, a different two that will need to be charged. So we found that the iPad is really fitted in very well to our existing infrastructure. Just a very basic gigabit Ethernet system with using Apple base stations. And those Apple base stations really can handle a large number. We can put about half the school in a couple of classrooms, and on two base stations, that'll support them all perfectly well.
And John, that brings us to you. You're in a bit of a different position. What's your thoughts on this issue?
Well, I suppose we are very fortunate in our network, because the North Lanarkshire School Network at the moment is separate from the corporate network, and it's run by educationalists, with a support of technicians and things. It's also, we're not completely a Mac authority, but the majority of primary schools are Mac, and some of the secondary schools are Mac. And the primary schools generally have Wi-Fi throughout, so it's quite open to that. We do have proxies which need to be set on machines, and it's fairly straightforward just to pop the proxies in, because all the projects we've run so far have been fairly small scale. The only problem is that some applications don't seem to honour the proxy settings and the system settings on the iPods and iPads. We've had to work around this with some by opening up various things. The network guys have opened up various things for some applications. A notable one which I really like, named Bump, which does quite a lot of network stuff and doesn't seem to check our proxies to go through the proxies. Probably we should leave the account stuff for later, but just on the charging thing, we've used multiple plugs that have three USB sockets in the plug. I think Kensington made them, and they worked really well. I'm a bit bothered buying any more at the moment and sourcing them, but they have been outstanding, because you can put four iPod touches in one plug, and four or five plugs in a multi-socket, and that works quite well.
That's great. Thanks for that, folks. I should probably mention at this point, given that myself and Jill could be getting ourselves into bother, to what we're saying, that everyone is talking on here is talking in a personal capacity and not representing their employers. That's some housekeeping out of the way that David told me to do. Right, we're going to go on to the next item on the wiki for discussion. Now, I've kind of stuck a couple of them together here, and I think this could be the meat and veg of it, from certainly what I've seen out and about from visiting schools and from what I'm hearing round and about. So what we're looking at next is kind of iTunes account management, licensing issues, how you manage the apps on each machine, and ensure a standard desktop if that's what you want. So I think maybe, given that Fraser's been rolling out a one-to-one deployment, maybe he'd be a good person to start this question with, and then we can hear from Jill before going on to Dan, and then coming back to John.
Okay, well, I guess the first thing to say is that iTunes terms and conditions are one of the big factors in this whole thing before you get into even really thinking about what you want to happen in your school. The first thing to be aware of is that the iTunes terms and conditions worldwide are different. So And there's a UK terms and conditions, there's a US terms and conditions, every country has their own, and they're different between the countries, they're not the same everywhere. So it's important to look at the right one for this country. But one thing that is common worldwide is that you cannot have, or Apple will not accept anyone under 13 having an iTunes account, and that's a provision of the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act in the United States. It's driven by their law rather than ours. So that really presents a problem for schools. Now, universities have got into this already, and they're okay because everybody at university is over 13, unless they're really, really, really clever, I guess. But so basically, schools have to provide something for most of their kids. What I've seen done in high schools in the States is what they've done is just they've basically handed over an iPad and they said to the kids, look, this is basically treat this as your. We normally give you a book list to buy every year. Well, here's your apps list this year. And what they just said is to the kids, you know, come back to school with these apps on your iPad and we'll be good to go. That's fine for older kids. For younger kids, you got to do something. So what we did at Cedars is we have a system where we have a number of different iTunes accounts in school. We have 3 accounts in total. And what we do is I have a central computer in my classroom, and then all the computers in the school are linked to that computer and use iTunes Home Sharing to copy new purchases from my computer onto their computers in 3 different accounts, iTunes accounts. And then from those computers in each classroom, they get synced out to the iPads. Now, that implies 3 purchases for the whole school, which is obviously not kosher. So what we do there to cover us on that is that we gift ourselves additional copies through the iTunes store, which is the only way that you can purchase multiple copies of an application, because as everybody knows, when you buy an app in the App Store, you can't buy it again. If you try and buy it again, they just let you download it for free. They don't charge you twice. So the only way to pay for more than one copy is to gift it to yourself. And that works fine for apps. When you look at iBooks from the iBook store, the whole model works the same way. You can purchase the iBooks and they'll be copied out to the other computers and synced to the iPads. But the bookstore doesn't support gifting a book. So there's actually no technical way. Even if I wanted to buy 20 copies of Stick of the Dump from the iBook store, there is no practical way to do it except to have 20 separate accounts and purchase it 20 times, which is too much work, in my opinion. So that's our best understanding of the terms and conditions as we see them. Now, if you ask Apple, you ask 5 Apple people, they're going to give you 12 different answers as to what the terms and conditions really mean for your school. So it's something that, I mean, I'm not going to go on the internet and interpret legal documents here, but I think it's something that everybody has to look at quite closely and just make sure that they know or to their best interpretation what's the way to do it.
Can I just ask you, please, are the desktops on your iPads, are they all the same, or do the students get to customize their own? How does that work?
We ask children, I mean, it's part of our terms and our own acceptable use policy, not to authorize the iPad for their own personal account. Now, there's no technical lock that I can put on that. It's just kind of please don't do it situation. And we have a series of system of spot check in our guidance classes in the morning just to have a look at things like not just apps that are being installed, but also things like email inbox and outbox and browser history and so on, and things like that. And kids have mostly, by and large, stuck with that. And I think one of the reasons they have stuck with that is that we're very flexible about the kind of apps we deploy. We don't just deploy, you know, dull educational apps like Pages. You know, we've also deployed a couple of games and stuff as well for some of our games-based learning topics. So they're quite happy with the mix that's there. And I think just one thing to say is that I think trying to strive for the same consistency on your set of iPads that you got on your computer lab back in the day I think that's not really the feel of the device, if you like. Certainly when you can be one-to-one, we're fortunate to be in that position. But when you are one-to-one, you can allow a wee bit more customization and personalization. We can maybe talk about some other strategies later on in a later topic about that, but there are other ways around that and ways to fake it if you don't have full one-to-one.
Now, before I go on to Jill to find out what she's got to say, I've been reminded to remind listeners that they can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk and then tweet at edutalk on Twitter. And you can contribute. David's going to come in a wee bit with anything that's come up on emails or tweets. Now, Jill, I would imagine your situation is probably quite different to Fraser's.
Yes, it is. We're not talking about the same kind of number of devices at the moment. Trying to keep it as legal as possible. It's not an easy thing to do, as Fraser was sort of discussing there, the gifting system and the way to get the multiple copies. The kind of bulk licensing is still an issue that's to be kind of dealt with, but we're not talking about huge numbers of devices yet, so I've set up a number of different accounts just to keep it as legal as possible, but we're not into a huge number of apps yet either. We're still very much at a pilot level. If we take the next step, which I would like to, and be able to go to something closer to one-to-one, we'd be talking about hundreds of devices, and then we would need to seek advice there from wherever we can to make it something that can work. At the moment, all our iPod Touch are exactly the same desktop as of all our iPad, different from each other, but they're all exactly the same. But then we're not doing it in a one-to-one. So although there's apps that one class might not use, another class might use, but we're just keeping them all on the machine at the moment. But there are a lot of issues should we go to a bigger scale, and even if we don't go to one, we will increase the numbers of these, so it has to be looked at. But I think it's something that everybody who's dealing with these kind of devices is kind of struggling with a wee bit, as to how you manage that in a system that wasn't really designed for multiple purposes, purchases. So it's a bit tricky.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. I think this is taking things in a direction that nobody had really go. And so we are tending to be operating in something of a grey area. Is that your experience of it, Dan?
Well, it is. But to be honest with you, like, from terms and conditions of the windows, because it is. I've spoken to people in Australia, and I totally agree with the other guys. You know, the terms and conditions, and absolutely, like, you know, you speak to different people, and they interpret it different ways. Different countries have got their own different solutions. You know, you follow up and then you realise you're reading a blog from Australia and they've got a completely different way of doing it. So basically, I've got a device called Parasync, because bear in mind, the devices we've got might be in several schools at the same time, so a set of 30 in, you know, several different schools that say eye touches. And we use a device called Parasync, which you can one laptop to really sync 30 at a time and charge them at the same time. And I've downloaded 133 apps on it. Now, I know, it's basically, you know, I know I'm on dodgy ground with it all, but actually, you know, it's again, these devices in hands of the teachers, and when it's in the school, then I find out then and say, well, you know, what do you want? What apps do you want on there? And then the schools are kind of making decisions themselves about the set up school writing accounts. So I'm saying, wipe them, keep them, do whatever you want to them. And they're all choosing different variations, but they're all finding there's terms and conditions, malarkey gets in the way. But initially, I went with a guy called Tony Vincent's blog, and Living with Hand, I think it's called, it's really good. And basically, as far as the desktops go, just for my own sanity as well, to a certain extent, I've set up the different devices, and when it syncs to the top that I use, it also syncs several image files, which have got numbers on them, it's done in Photoshop in a specific resolutions size for eye touch devices and for different devices, so that when they charge in or when they're out at the table, the background pictures are all set in 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, it's changed them, and exactly the same as some of the other guys just mentioned, you know, it's for the discretion with the kids. if they want to go in and change it, they go in and change it, but I can send it back anyway, or that, you know, the schools can change. Well, I also uploaded a few other images to them, because we were doing an experiment for assessment for learning in England at the minute, and there's a big push on that. The diaries have got red, yellow and green, you know, pages in them, and if they're struggling with work, they flick it over to red or whatever. So they were using the devices to switch the background to yellow or red or green as a bit of a learning tool. So I put a few images on this that didn't change, but just for my own sanity, and when you count them and when you charge them, you know, I can see that we've got, you know, sets of 30 of them. So, you know, and one thing would be quite interesting to hear from the guy, so let me just go through one of the things in the backgrounds. I've gone through all the top apps and through Twitter and picked up like 130 apps or so, which are free. You know, I haven't purchased any, so I don't technically have a breach in the terms and conditions, I'm sure, because they're free, I'm not really too worried about it. The under 13 issue is a big one. But again, to be honest with you, I'm not even thinking about it. Parasync is what we use, which has been really good, excellent. But the local device settings of the bit which I'm grappling with at the minute, and I'm sure people using the Apple and software, there may be ways around this, but after I've synced the devices, I've had to go into the restrictions. The restrictions are they're very good, where you can restrict age content, internet accessibility, the different apps, the app store, you can restrict it all. But if you put the PIN number in, for example, and then, you know, so restricted. But as soon as, say, the network manager, or for a lesson, you wanted to unrestrict the internet in the class, or whatever it may be, as soon as you go into that, then all of the restrictions are lifted, and you can't just quickly go back in. So if you compare it to, say, the Nintendo DSi, you can then, on the DSi, the parental login, in effect, you can do a parental lockdown. And as soon as the device is reset and it's locked down again, they say you're going in. And, but it is after to do the restrictions on the iPod touch devices. I'm not sure, you know, presumably it's the same on the iPad. It'd be great if anybody else had got any thoughts on that. But that's our kind of thought on the background and the syncing option and the apps. You know, that's useful for people.
Now, just before we go on to John, I got a text from our dapper. David has told me that I have told you to tweet at EduTalk, and you should be tweeting hashtag EduTalk, so I must apologise for that. At the moment, it's sounding like the clear answer is there's no real clear answer. Is that what you're finding, John?
Yeah, I think it's a real pity we have to spend so much time talking about this stuff, about devices, which are just, I think, very wonderful myself, but we're pretty much finding that. When I started out setting up iPods, at that time, it was kind of the advice, maybe not the advice from Apple, but the advice from the blogosphere was, oh, you just buy it once and you buy it on as many as you can. Obviously, since then, we've rethought, and for the ones that are lending out, we're doing the gifting thing. And pretty much restricting using a lot of free applications rather than the paid ones. But there's a wee problem with the gifting thing, which I bumped into a couple of days ago. I was out at a primary school who just bought a set of 20 iPods, and they had a set of gift cards with these iPods, and they had a couple of 18-15 gift cards. And before I had a wee practice and stuff, and I've discovered that you just can't gift apps with a gift card. You can only gift apps if you've got a credit card. From that point, I contacted Apple and asked him about this, and he actually wasn't, Fraser saying you get so many different answers, he wasn't aware of this. He thought, yeah, you could use gift cards to gift apps, and it became quite difficult, and I spent, I think, best all morning and the best part of the afternoon sitting with two other members of the school and syncing these iPods, and we ended up actually just not using any paid apps at all because it was taking too long to set up email account, register it, sync the iPod. We're having to update software as well. That it seemed more practical in the short term. Hopefully, over the summer holidays, we'll have a bit more time to do it. But it's quite time consuming, I think that's a big problem. The restrictions thing that Dan was talking about, I've not had any problem with because I think you restrict a couple of things, like buying apps, and I'm stuck on the, you know, parental guidance stuff on various content, so I don't think it's really applicable. But the web we just leave on all the time, so we're not having to go in and switch that on and off. The children have always got access to the web. And certainly the wee one-to-one we did last year, that was just, I thought, one of the really great things about the application, the iPods. You can put it down upside, just listen to the teacher, pick it up, turn it on, look up something, find it out, you know, or they're in the middle of a reading group, they want to find out a map route from the Western Isles to the Flathead. They can do it straight away on the network and then just put the device down again. So I've been there for a while. To cut off network access for any of the wee guys.
Okay, I'm quite conscious that time is marching on, so what we're going to do for the next couple of questions is we're going to do a quick blast round the panellists, and you're going to get a minute to tell me what you think. Now, for the first one, we're looking at a one-to-one deployment versus one-to-many. Says, we'll start with John, and then John's finished, Jill can come in. As soon as Jill's finished, Dan can come in, and then Fraser can come in at number four. I have a feeling I might know what his answer is already. So, one-to-one deployment as opposed to one-to-many.
Hey, well, if I could, I think I would just go for the one-to-one. We're not at that stage where I work at the moment. We're doing some tests. We'll be running a pilot or two, but we've not got there. I also think, just especially for the iPod device, it is just a very powerful classroom device. Just thinking of it as a combination of a camera and a video recorder and a voice recorder, which is networked, and you can fire stuff up to a shared space very easily, which is one of the things that really excites me about them. So even if I was in a classroom and had one iPod Touch, I think it would be in use all the time. When I first bought an iPhone, I was in class and it took me about a day and a half to hand over to the children to run about a field doing some geolocation. I think that sort of thing, it can just be a device. Obviously, I'm totally with Fraser on it. They want to be owned, they want to be personal devices, but they also can be just good cameras, the one you've got in your pocket.
Jill, you coming in?
Oh, yes, I'll come in there. Yes, I mean, we're not looking at one-to-one at the moment. It's something we may look to. The way we work in the school, we do a lot of cooperative, a lot of collaborative work, so we look at devices shared between 2 and 4. I agree with John, one-to-one might be the ambition, but there's a huge amount you can get out with less than one-to-one. So one-to-a-few or one-to-many is still a very valuable device, and that's how we're exploring it at the moment. One-to-one would allow always equity of access, etc. But with careful management, we can make really good use out of less than that. Okay?
My experience of it, I've given them up to schools and I've given them 30 to a class set in second, they've kind of 15 to class set, and field trips and things. You know, it's the time and the place and the opportunities for the devices, I think, you know, and like you said earlier on, if you could have one, you know, sometimes I was in a class the other day with one iPad, and providing the lessons managed well, you can work with one iPad or one iPod Touch. Pedagogically, 1.1-to-1 teaching, you know, is good, but maybe not all the time, you know, and they also, you know, it's about group work, it's about working together, you know, so an iPod, you know, there's some really good field work where kids have been going out in groups, you know, a load of English kids went to Wales to get some cultural experience probably, but also there's some geography at the same time, and they actually I think groups of three, I believe, and then they were doing geolocation with them and using them in teams. So I think, I don't think it's about how many devices you get to build, although, if everybody's got access to one, then you're more open for a variety of different activities. But if money is an object, it's about the way you use them, not how many you've got, I suppose. Yeah, that sounds a bit cliche. But I've seen different permutations of these devices, and they kind of work when you've got 1 or 30 in a class. So, yeah.
Well, as you guessed correctly about what I was going to say about this, I mean, we've seen one-to-one technology. We went from four pupils to one computer a year ago to one-to-one, and we've really seen it transform our school in a way that we never expected. We bought these things on the basis that, it would give us, it would give us a word processor, it would give us more access to the web, and we, even as teachers and administrators, couldn't really imagine the change that would have happened to our school when we got these devices. So I'm a real convert to one-to-one. But I agree with everybody who's spoken before that if you can't do one-to-one, then there are definitely ways in which you can use a set of 30 and deploy them in your school in a way that you can kind of give people a sense of one-to-one and an extended period of time where they have a device that they can call their own. One of the things that we found, though, is that with one-to-one and with a program where kids can take them home, that's enabled us to set a lot more homework that is kind of technologically enabled, if you like, because when you don't know what there is at home, then there's always the, well, my computer was down or it didn't work in my machine or whatever. And if we're sending home with no excuse, say, well, the only excuse you've got left is that your Wi-Fi was down. And that's the excuse we get all the time now. So that's how it goes. But I'm really in favor of it. And I think if schools can get to it, it's going to really transform a lot of schools. If you get to it, these devices are still absolutely the best on the market for what we want them to do.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, no clear answer there as far as if one's preferable to the other. I suppose you could argue that if you've got a one-to-one, you can easily decide that you're not all crashing your iPods or your iPads out. Next question that we've got here is, it's easy to book. What about an iPad? Now, I have absolutely nothing to say here because I've got no idea. I'm just going to go straight through, and if you're like me, you're just going to be looking at a quick yes, no, don't know kind of response, and maybe someone out, maybe Fraser or John, I don't know, maybe Dan, might have a better idea as to whether that's actually the case. So maybe we'll start with Jill, and then we'll let Dan come in, and then Fraser, and then John.
Well, come in with that. I don't really know because I'm the person. I'm a teacher.
Sorry, I lost a bit of the thread then. Which question are we looking at?
We've jumped down to the, it's easy to ghost a netbook. What about an iPad?
Going back to my point earlier on, I think if you're talking about ghost in terms of, recovering settings and blah, 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 that's exactly what I'm doing in the schools. But I'm using a device called Parasync. They're about £200, and you just plug it in and it gets back to original settings, and I've got one, master account which I've got, which then just syncs them all. So that's the way I get around that, and I can sync 60 or 30 iPods in about, it does it about 20 minutes, something like that, 30 minutes. Okay?
Fraser, I would imagine you've got a bit of an answer here. You've got lots.
First things first, let's be clear for the listeners about what a Parasync is. It's a box with 30 dock connectors on the top that connects to the USB connection on the computer. So you've still got a computer in the mix there. And what it just lets you do is have many, many, many iOS devices connected to one computer, whereas anybody in their house would just have a little cable and one device connected. The Parasync can let you put 30 on at once. Right? This question is really about how do you configure an iPad to standard settings? Now, there's a couple of ways you can do this. One that I've seen a lot of museums use is what they do is they get one device and they configure it to a kind of golden state, the way they want it to be set up. They'll back up that device to iTunes, and then they'll restore every other device from that device's backup. So you're basically, you know, sucking his brains out and then deploying his brains to every other machine. And that's a great way to take 30 devices and put them back to factory settings or put them back to your preferred settings so that they all look the same. That works great for that kind of situation. The other way you can do it, if you want to just deploy settings, is you can use a thing called iPhone Configuration Utility, which is a program that runs on the Mac. I think it runs in Windows now as well, where you can build little profiles that you then can deploy to the device. So we did that as Cedars, and that lets us deploy Wi-Fi settings, school calendar subscription. It lets us enforce passcode policy on the device, and then we can deploy the user's email settings, and we can do that all with two clicks of the mouse, so you don't have to go tapping in people's settings on the device all the time. So depending on what you mean by ghost, whether it's full system restore or just imaging a device and then configuring multiple devices from that image, there are various ways to do this with iPad in both cases.
Great. Now, just before I come to you, John, I'm going to give David a wee bit of warning that after your answer here, we're going to call him in to see if there's anything happening in the big wide world. What's your experience of ghosting then, John?
Well, I've got a complete answer to that. I read Fraser's blog. that's pretty much it. And there's a lot of good things. I mean, I think you've described very well what he does, but also looked at a few other models. So that's been my main source. I've not used the iPhone config yet. Our mail system is through First Class, so I'm not 100% sure if I mail a profile to a First Class account, and that will go down. I hope to get a wee shot at that in summer and see how it goes.
Right, now, just for us, David, to chime in. If John has mentioned Fraser's blog, now if you're looking to see that is on the suggested reading on the wiki, spears.org/blog, and there's also John's own blog that he's not mentioned, which is also up there as well. I found a few other things just today, and I haven't had time to put them on there, but I'll throw them up later on. So if you're listening to this on recording and you're looking to see any of them, you can come in and check the link. Okay, just looking for you to come in if you've got any tweets or emails or anything to say, David.
Yeah, I've just said, I checked about 5 minutes ago, Ian, and there's not been anything. We know that people like Joe Dale and Neil Winton are listening and are trying to listen in live, but no comments at the moment. So if you come back to me in about 5 minutes, we'll see if there's anything.
Grand. I was kind of looking at the thing, and we've got about 12 minutes left, so I was thinking, when we leave the authority department's cluster policies thing to the end, and we'll fit it in if we've got time, because I think the other kind of grouping of questions that we've got here is far more interesting and perhaps far more relevant. And this is looking at, is there a way to suggest changes to Apple through using, like, people who have been using the iPod Touch and the iPad in class? Is there a way to suggest changes to Apple, and what might these changes be? And I think maybe the way we'll do this is if we'll start with Dan, then go to Jill, then to John, and then to Razor. So, Dan, what's your thoughts there?
They're getting there, aren't they? And I'm not an ADE, an Apple Distinguished Educator, or anything like that. And I'm afraid there's a lot more detail on this. But, from the conversations I've had, I think the difficulty starts to get when you start to deal with resellers. You know, there's a lot of resellers where we are, and the resellers are bringing Apple Distinguished Educators. So you're not really directly influencing, from a school point of view, or even an LA point of view, Apple themselves. So it depends on what they want to, or actually do. I don't know what the channels would be to go directly to Apple. You know, I know some of the resellers are really trying their best to, you know, show what's available. For example, at the Bet Show in London this year, you have companies like Toucan and all of these kind of companies who've been supplying iPads for conferences and things, saying that they suggest that are suing for cab drivers, they're not getting to the nitty-gritty like filming people in their blogs, you know, they're not getting to the nitty-gritty of how you actually use these things. And I don't know whether they've got the drive, because there's no political motivation in anything, you know, for them, you know, there's no money to kind of get out of making them more popular in schools yet. Even though they are getting there with their adverts and they're realizing the potential, but I think they realize it's a bottom-up approach, really. So it is something we, you know, we need to keep banging on the door at, because it's people like Faze and Jill and people who've got them in their schools who actually need to be banging on their door and saying, the best way to do this, guys, you need to change this, that and the other. But as far as from the processes, I think the way the supply chain works for them is quite, you know, tricky. I'm sure Faze and everybody else online will have a better, more clear view on this. Thanks.
Jill, you are an Apple distinguished educator, I believe, so have you got a different kind of perspective on that?
I've been in AD for a number of years now, and also the school is a regional training centre for Apple, but I have good relationships with Apple Education, both in Scotland and in the UK, but we are talking about an enormous organisation in terms of Apple. I find the support I get from Apple Education UK and from the reseller to be great. But in terms of whether my suggestions are taken on, they're very supportive. We are talking about a major international company, which is quite difficult to change. But I do find I get support on the ground from the education guys.
So there is, what you're saying is there is a way for you to flag up some suggestions to at least someone in the Apple organisation, whether they're taken up or not.
Yeah.
What sort of suggestions are you talking about there?
Well, we've sort of spoken over a number of years and sort of ways of sort of getting a hold of software and like that, and sort of learning about things. But there is the ADE network, which is quite a useful one as you get to know people there. I say we're part of the Regional Training Centre network as well, which gives us an opportunity to share ideas and learn things. But we're not really able to sort of change what Apple's planning to do, but it does allow you to kind of learn tips and get ideas and be supported on the ground when you're working.
Okay, and John, now I can't remember off the top of my head if you're an Apple Distinguished Educator or not, but if you're not, I think you most certainly should be. What's your thoughts here?
Well, I don't know about distinguished, but I seem to have that tag. I've been in AD for a while, and the authority I work in have got a regional training centre, and I believe we're also the biggest education network in Europe that is mainly Mac. And again, I think we get a lot of support from Apple, but I would imagine when it's like saying to Apple, change the licensing deal for iOS, we're probably a drop in the ocean. I imagine that Apple would still be considering these, their market as personal devices to a large extent, or for environments where it's easier to have individuals set up devices. So I don't know if we'd have much traction on getting anything changed there. The most I would hope for in the next wee while is if somebody was sort of semi officially sort of the gifting thing out and allow schools to do that via gift cards. No one for that or not. We can see. I think
most of us.
Some interesting things are interesting possibilities. If they talked about a different model for distributing hardware to pupils, maybe partner owned or something like that. But I have no idea if that's going to be possible. I know our own local authority would have difficulty with that for legal reasons. So I'm not really very sure how we could influence Apple.
Yeah, I think most of us would quite welcome some moves in that direction. I was thinking maybe not even things that are that big. One of the things I would really like to do, if it was possible in some way, is if you put an app on, if there was some way to lock it open so that it didn't get closed down and then just put back on the next time you scrolled around that kind of area, of the classroom. Fraser, you, if you're deploying one-to-one across your whole school, you must have some students, and being the first one-to-one deployment in the world, from what I gather, do you have Apple's ear?
A little bit. We didn't have Apple's ear before we did it. We kind of were given, I like to take the risk on our own first, I suppose. But, I mean, Jill was right that, you know, Apple is a however many $100 billion company, and they're huge worldwide. But there is one way that everybody can influence Apple, and I'll tell you what it is, that they have this system of bug reporting, which is on the developer site at Apple, and the address is bugreporter.apple.com. And if you file a bug in Bug Reporter, then every single submission in that database is read by an Apple engineer and categorized in some way. So if you have a specific feature request that needs changing, then the only way to get it in front of an engineer app to log it in Bug Reporter, talking to your reseller or talking, going to the Apple store and complaining to those guys, that's not going to get anywhere. But if you, as a member of the public with a free developer account, to go and log a bug and just say, here's what doesn't work for me, here's how I'd like it to work, an actual product engineer at Apple will read that bug and will either file it as a duplicate of another bug or whatever. And I know for a fact, because I've been to the developers conference and they tell us this every year, that the number of bugs that are logged against a certain feature catches a voting system for that feature. I'll give you one example. I mean, Apple does listen, and I'll give you one example is iPad 2 and the ability to mirror the entire display onto a projector or a television. I have no doubt that that was in large part, well, both Apple's own demo people, but also education applications. And you saw Steve Jobs get up on stage at the iPad 2 introduction and say, this new feature, it's huge for education. Those were his exact words. And I'm certain that a lot of those feature requests from education. So reporting bugs to Apple is the way to get in front of an engineer. Having a good relationship with Apple through the Apple Education channel is very valuable. And I know that certainly in Scotland, the guys in Scotland have never been so engaged and so keen to talk to as many people as they can. You know, they ask me every time they see me, Who's been emailing me this week? We want to talk to them, you know. So if anybody has that kind of interest, please talk to me and I can put you in touch with them if you're seriously interested in doing something in your school. I think that's really the main way to do it. Obviously, talking to people and having a blog is something as well. But the only way to really change engineering priorities at Apple is to file a bug about it.
We'll finish off with what John suggested there, and just like, what's your favourite app, or what's the best app you've seen, and just maybe one piece of advice that you would give to anyone who was thinking of deploying these kinds of in an education situation. So I think we'll just go. We'll go back to the order that Vicky is in, just to finish off. So if we just move through Fraser, John, Gillian, and then Dan. Okay.
My absolute favorite app on iOS is an app called OmniFocus, which is a task management program made by guys called the Omni Group. And there's a version for the Mac, there's a version for the iPad, and there's a version for the phone, and they all wirelessly sync with each other. So you've got all your to-dos and projects and everything on every device simultaneously, which is really great when you're out and about or whether you're sitting at your desk. Close second would be the Amazon Kindle app, which I love. Any advice for anybody setting this up? Go for it. Yeah, don't let the nerds put you off. A lot of people are down on these devices. They say they're only for content consumption, but I can guarantee you that I see every single day in my school people creating amazing things in these devices. They're not just for watching a movie on. Absolutely not.
Okay, John.
My favourite app, which is an iPhone app, is called Wi-Fi Photo Transfer. There's a few of these apps, there's one. The one I like is the free one. And all it does is the one screen that gives you a web address, you hit that address in your browser on the same Wi-Fi network, and it basically serves up a website of all the photos and movies stored on your iPod, and it's a great way of getting stuff off without running about for cables for distributing stuff. There's quite a few apps do the same sort of thing for their own media, but I just love this one. I just go along with Fraser. I always think of an iPod first as something to make stuff on, rather than consume. I listen to podcasts on my iPhone all the time, but I think of it as my camera, my voice recorder, my video, a thing I can blog with. I can post the posters especially and other places. So yeah, you should get one.
Okay, and we are on to Jill. Jill, favourite app? Any advice?
Oh, this is always a difficult one. There's so many out there. Probably at the moment my favourite app is the GarageBand on the iPad. We just finished a project 2 days. The children were composing their own title music for some videos they're making, and the creativity and the collaboration that went on during that is amazing, and it allowed the non-musical to be just as involved as the musical. From a learning point of view, it was outstanding. And my piece of advice when thinking about these machines in the classroom or these devices is thinking about it in terms of what new can it make happen, what's different about these devices. It's not something you're replacing in the classroom. It's where can it take new learning, and there's so many possibilities with it. They're absolutely phenomenal.
I'm listening to everything coming up with all these really good apps, and I'm thinking to myself, it's quite sad that my favourite app is the Sky Plus app, because when I forget to set something up, I can always come back to it. My own advice to anyone would be thinking, really, it's better to ask forgiveness than to ask for permission. Dan, what's your favourite app, and if you get any advice to
I'm glad you mentioned GarageBand, because I think that is absolutely immense. You know, it's got everything in it. What an app that is. That's an absolute blinding app. My hot tip app at the minute is all Razzma. There's been a few people tweeting on it at the minute. It's an augmented reality app, which means you can actually set it to recognize images and play video or links over the top of it. It's a bit like the QR codes, you know, like the barcode scanners. It uses your phone as an augmented reality thing. It's called Orasma, and it's absolutely blinding. Obviously, the classic is Dropbox. More than that, that isn't proper stuff there. You know, it's invaluable for me personally, and I can imagine it will be for the kids, but how you'd use that in a class set, but I'm not going to open a can of worms there, but they're the three I'd go for, Orasma, Dropbox, and GarageBand. That's why my tip, I totally agree with everybody said anything today. You know, I think learning has got to be key all the way along here. But I think sometimes teachers are afraid to play, and, you know, you think about games, and sometimes you think, well, the kids are enjoying themselves, so they can't be learning. And good teachers have always played games with kids. You know, there's so many lessons, and, you know, you when you've been observed, especially in England, it's very kind of monotonous, boring, step into the lesson plan. And learning can be so much more, taken to so many more levels of these devices. So I think it's about instilling confidence. And if I had one tip, it would be to just kind of live a little, and I've seen some schools where they have a kind of where a teacher, a bit like Google days, you know, you're going to go into your lesson 1 hour every week, do whatever you want. You're not going to be observed. Experiment, have fun, you know, just do it.
That sounds like good advice to me. Now, we're just starting to come to the end here, so I'm going to do a wee bit of housekeeping just for anyone who's listening on recording. We might be coming to an end, but the discussion keeps on going. If you're looking to contribute, if you email edutalker, that's edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, you can certainly contribute that way. And also by using the hashtag edutalker, again, edutalker, on Twitter, and you will get picked up that way. I have thoroughly enjoyed the discussion tonight, which, having been elected chair, I wasn't sure I was going to, but I thoroughly enjoyed it and I've learned a lot. I'd like to just have a quick reminder that everyone tonight has been talking in a personal capacity. I'd like to thank all of you for coming on. You have been a brilliant panel. I think we certainly had a lot of knowledge on here. I hope that's not what broke every talker. And it's been great. So now I'm just going to pass you on to David, who's going to wrap up.
Yeah, thanks, Ian. I think you did a fantastic job, and hopefully you'll be up for it again in the future. And I'll just apologise for my stuttering contributions this evening. I've got the youngest is running about. I think she's finally settled down now. It was great to notice on Twitter that Walter Patterson, education consultant and former Her Majesty's Inspector, has also been listening in and posting some excellent tweets under the EduTalker hashtag. So I'm summing up, particularly there just at the end, people's most favourite apps. We also mentioned Joe Dale earlier on, and I just wanted to do Joe justice because he put such fantastic work in, and Joe's blog recently put a phenomenal post together about how PostgreSQL can be used in many different ways. And just to repeat, because again through Twitter there's been a bit of kind of confusion about the web address that I read out, so the work that he's doing there, he's collecting education apps for modern foreign languages teachers. It's using the PostgreSQL book Marklet, I think it's called, which looks really cool. The web address to look at all these different education apps is mfledapps.posterous.com, and it's worth checking out his blog for all the other great work that he's doing in that area. So that's my brief contribution for the night, even though, and again, thanks to everybody on the panel.
I think I've said all my final comments, but if anyone else would like to say anything, we can just run down the way that the wiki set up again. Fraser, John, Jill, Dan.
Yeah, I just want to say to anybody in Scottish education, Cedar's door is always open to you if you want to come and find out what we're doing. Well, you'd be welcome any time.
I just like to enjoy very much this evening's chat. I agree with John. We maybe need to think about why we do it, the good side of this, not the difficulties, because it does outweigh any problems that there are when you see the children working with the devices and how much they get from it. It kind of works a bit easy to take, indeed. So thanks very much for tonight.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the discussion tonight. I think, you know, to take you further, I suppose, it might be nice, you know, via Twitter or something. There's lots of things out there, but maybe to start to generate a UK-based, you know, Google Doc and thing where we can start to put our apps and start to, you know, link them to the Scottish, English, Welsh, whatever curriculum areas so that people can, teachers have got an easy way to go because, you know, these apps are coming out left, right and centre and they're absolutely fantastic. But, you know, I think I get that quite a bit, people asking for, what would you recommend for an English app? What do you recommend for this? And, you know, maybe you can take this discussion further or, you know, know somewhere already, so let me know on Twitter. But, yeah, positive, definitely. Thanks again.
Okay, I think maybe the areas for discussion up on the wiki kind of steered us in that direction and the practicalities. So maybe we should be looking at doing another show sometime on the benefits of using iPods and iPads in the classroom. I'd certainly be very interested in hearing what the panel had to say about that. But I think that's it for the evening. So once again, I would say thanks to all the panellists for their contributions and for anyone who's out there